Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom, stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for March 26, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find our show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on the dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter, X, at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click a red box to sponsor this podcast and you can set up a one-time a reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever. But as always, we'd like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, alongside, as always, Case Lowe. And Case, it's a big week for me this week, man. Like, Thursday is a day that I'd never thought I would see in my entire life.
Is this the Texas Rangers ring ceremony?
Well, the ring ceremony is on Saturday. They're stringing this out here because there's people that will live and die and only have one Texas Rangers World Series. So they're doing the ring ceremony on Saturday. Opening day is going to be the banner, though. That's the one I care about.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. So, but I've been playing a little bit of MLB The Show since we talked about this last week. And I have to say, you're right about getting into March to October. That's a fun mode.
Right? Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm already like 8 games up on the Houston Astros. It's fantastic.
There you go. Yeah, I
only
like
played
that
9 hours.
Oh my God, that's great.
Yeah, it's the best.
This is going to become a baseball podcast here within the next week or so. I am, my baseball fandom has shifted from my father is a Detroit Tigers fan, so I grew up a Tigers fan. I became a Dodgers fan because Indiana doesn't have a baseball team, and I liked Manny Ramirez, and Manny Ramirez got traded to the Dodgers, and I was with them for 10 years. And then I got very bored of the Dodgers, just their constant 100-win, zero-ring seasons. And even when they won a championship, it was during COVID, so it didn't totally feel real. And I have, for whatever reason, shifted into just being a tortured White Sox fan. And I feel like over the last year and a half or 2 years, I have absorbed decades and decades of White Sox-related trauma. I embrace it to some degree, and I will be at Guaranteed Rate Field opening day Thursday for Tigers White Sox.
Hell yeah. So both of us have opening day tickets this year.
Yeah. I've never been to an opening day. I'm looking forward to it.
It was something where, like, my family that live in Southern Ohio, all big Cincinnati Reds fans, have been going to opening day, especially since the Reds used to have the original, like, early opening day in front
still
of everyone
should.
Else.
I hate that they don't.
So, like, they always talk to me about, like, oh, yeah, we always get to go to opening day, and that's a big thing, and never went to one, like, as a kid for the Rangers. Never really, like, that was, like, the thing always about the Rangers games, like, particularly because of how awkward DFW is. And as, like, our international listeners might know now, like, there's no World Cup in Dallas-Fort Worth because we don't believe in public transit. So it was one of those things they didn't get to go to opening day until, like, I basically decided when the Rangers made the World Series, not going to pay for a World Series ticket, but will pay for a opening day ticket to see the banner actually be up there. So that's big for me.
Every fan deserves that. I mean, I witnessed a Rams Super Bowl, and it was genuinely thrilling. I mean, it made me so happy. I hope at one point I can see the Pacers raise a banner. So in a very sincere moment, I am so happy that you got to experience that. I love this Rangers team. I hope you guys are able to follow up again this year, because I really enjoy what you guys do.
Well, I appreciate it, buddy. And yeah, it's a wild thing. I mean, they decided that, like, Evan Carter wasn't enough. Why not call up Wyatt Langford while we're at it? So other than Adolis Garcia, like, the outfield has, like, an average age of 22 right now this year.
That's all. So that sounds nice.
Fun. It's going to be fun to watch, even though every single pitcher is on the DL right now. Like, it's basically like, all right, we have big game Nate. Because that's all we have, really, is Nate Eovaldi. Until hopefully sometime in October or whenever, when we might be able to see Max Scherzer. Like, this is the weird thing about being a Rangers fan right now. Like, I'm used to, like, hating pitching. Now I'm waiting around for.
Yeah, no, I'm a Scherzer truther, and I will defend him until the wheels totally fall off. But I'm trying to think of, like, Rangers pitching over the years. I feel like Cole Hamels was, like, a big disappointment, but maybe my memory's incorrect.
So basically there was no Ranger pitcher of note other than Ferguson Jenkins until 1996.
Yeah.
So then you went to, let's see how many names I can do and how much is going to aggravate people. You had Aaron Seeley and Rick Helling along with Bobby Witt Sr. back then.
Wow. Bobby Witt Sr.
Yeah, and that pretty much held the team until, like, the 2000s. They had, like, a random really good reliever named Jeff Zimmerman, who was, like, lights out for 2 years, and then he completely fell off. And then, really, you're getting to the point of, like, the dead days. And 2010, 2011, I mean, really, like, your homegrown guy was Derek Holland, and he was kind of a nutcase.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that.
And Nefertari Feliz, but Nefertari Feliz came over with Matt Harrison and the
share trade,
right? So
yes, red glove Nathalie Feliz, which as a child, anybody that had a red glove was cool with me.
Yeah, he was like the one that always had red and blue gloves. But other than that, you got your random so many just like free agents pitchers they try to bring in. Like, you had like Cole Hamels, as you were saying, who that was one that like Cole Hamels like family like wanted to be in Dallas for whatever reason. Cliff Lee,
that's who I couldn't think of. Cliff Lee.
The one that like famously hated Dallas, but he loved the fact that he could get a private plane to go back to whatever town he's from in Arkansas during his off days, and the Rangers wouldn't say a thing. What it's like to be, it must be sick to be a professional athlete in the Metroplex, as long as you're not a Dallas Cowboy, to be clear. Because like, as we were talking beforehand, Kaze, like, if you are a wunderkind on either the baseball or basketball team, you could pretty much write your own check every time.
Yeah. Man, I'm looking at the Rangers 2010 rotation.
It's rough.
Well, it brings back so many memories because it's Colby Cliff Lee. Lewis. And I love Cliff Lee. Man, I had so much Colby Lewis stock. CJ Wilson, straight edge CJ Wilson. Tommy Hunter, who is from Indianapolis. I played on a baseball field that he built once, or donated money to build. And then, Feliz and Darren Oliver and Darren O'Day. Oh, my goodness. Well, 2010 Texas Rangers. God, I wish you guys would have won that title.
Darren Oliver was like 50 at that time. Because Darren Oliver was like a pitcher in 96, too. Like, I feel like.
Darren Oliver was born in what year?
He was born in 62, but he like was pitching forever.
He's born in 1970. Man is 1,000 years old playing in Major League Baseball.
Is he still I think he his final season was 2013. So he pitched for 20 years.
Oh my god.
With only three different stints on the Texas Rangers, 93-98, 2000-2001, 2010 and 2011. Now that is a wild kind of ride for that. Like Arthur Rhodes esque.
Arthur, another great pull. Stick with us Europeans. I have one more baseball point to make. I will complain about this every year. I don't understand why the MLB is so bad at scheduling.
Oh, they're the worst.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, you think about the way the NFL has drawn it. Their schedule release now takes a full week to do almost. It's unbelievable. The NBA gets it. They announce their big marquee games. MLB, they just decide in July, like, hey, here's the matchups for next season. I don't get it. Doesn't make any sense.
And it's done by, like, this old couple that have done it since, like, 1963.
I did not know that. That makes me very angry. But I have a problem with when they announce it. I go see the Dodgers play the Cubs every year. It's always in April. I don't understand that. Why are you in Chicago playing a team on the West Coast in April when it's horrible here? Do the Los Angeles set in April. Do the Cubs-Dodgers set in Chicago in July. That'd be greatly appreciated. But also, now they do this thing, and this affects me as a White Sox fan this year, where opening day is a Thursday,
yeah,
and then they don't play on Friday. What is that?
Oh, it completely kills fantasy baseball. Like, we had the Voices of Wrestling adjacent AL Keeper League draft on Sunday, and it's like, wow, we, like, how are we doing a draft right now for AL keepers when, like, everything has been about Shohei Ohtani over the last week? Like, that has, like, objectively been the story. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I think, like, the weird like the fact that baseball and its eccentricities, like, we're basically up until the 90s, you had two separate leagues working in the same apparatus, like, that, like, they were actual things. Like it was a thing where, like, there was, like, the president of the National League was a real thing, and it was just, like, impossible to get scheduling right. And it's something where, like, why is it that you still are stuck with this? Like, yes, you're having to schedule a lot more things, but you're doing it not necessarily in places where, like, you're worried about, like, okay, imagine, like, right now I have on just in my office the Lakers Bucks games in Milwaukee. How many events probably happen in the Milwaukee arena throughout the year, like, including a Bucks games? You're talking about like 100 or so.
Yeah, 41 Bucks games plus the playoffs, plus that's become a very coveted concert venue as well. So
right, so like, there's a lot of balancing there. There's really not that in baseball because of the venue specific or the sports specific venues now. So, like, why haven't we gotten it figured out that, like, it's bad like that, and you're not, like, we should be like, okay, Texas and Cubs are the opening day matchup. Like, wouldn't you want to maneuver that around to be Texas opening up against Houston?
Yeah, I will never. That's a great point. Yeah, why is it the Rangers and the Cubs? I mean, I think the Cubs are going to be good this year. I'm excited to see them play. But why is that your opening day matchup? They have no history with one another.
Yeah, so it's like the sort of things there where I feel like that baseball, like, you had over a century of apparatus that you're still dealing with the vestiges of without, like, the idea of and like the wild thing about this, and this is the kind of thing that I find personally very interesting, but I know that wrestling fans might not as so. Baseball was the innovator with technology. Baseball was the first thing that, like, the streaming backbone is built on baseball's a streaming apparatus that they built up with MLB AM. And why is it that one side was so forward thinking? Like, Netflix was based off of it. WWE Network, when they launched it in 2013, they made a big deal about being with the MLB Advanced Media. Why is it that basically you're not able to do any other sorts of modernizing other than how to make the games go faster? Like, why is it that?
And I'm still annoyed that there's DHs in the National League, and those are my thoughts on baseball for this week.
well, thank you all for listening to the open, the, I don't know what I was going to think. I'm trying to think of, like, a famous gate in baseball.
Ooh,
and famous we can't do Golden Gate. And we can't do Golden Gate because that was a show.
Huh. Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, well, welcome to Open the Baseball Gate. We're done with that. We're here, though, because we've had a interesting middle week of March right now. This week on the program, it's kind of working out. We're going to talk about week 3 of Rey de Parejas. We're getting to a close. There's only three matches in each block. We're getting to discover who are the top tag team in Dragon Gate. As well, we had Buyadin Volume 4 happen, the first one of the year. Short little show coming out of Shinjuku Face last week. And we'll talk about WrestleMania week as well. But Case, the story for Dragon Gate, at least in March, has been Rey de Parejas. They had shows in Fukui. I'm pulling up my other show places that they were. That in Takagawa, and as well as Nagano this week. We did not really get to see like a little bit of, I'll say, like, I feel like this was a week where it was so natural vibe focus. I almost forgot that that Big Hug hasn't had a match in weeks yet. But interesting week, I feel like, of Rey de Parejas. What were your overall thoughts?
I enjoyed it. You know, I started really thinking as we get deeper and deeper into this tournament, comparing 2024 Rey de Parejas to 2023 Rey de Parejas, and the things that I liked about last year more than this year, and the things I like about this year more than last year. And, you know, on these specific sets of shows, the house shows from March 20th, March 23rd, and March 24th, which are all on YouTube, I find I found the 20th to be a pretty non-essential upload. I don't think there was anything there that anybody needs to see. But all of the natural vibe stuff that preceded it on the 23rd and 24th, that is where this tournament is buttering its bread. You know, I think it's a little fair to say at this point, last year's tournament was a little bit stronger. And I started to think why that is. And it's like, well, you know, you had gamers last year. You know, you had the Mochizukis and you had Kato and Nagano and obviously Jason and Jackie and some guys that, you know, when you're wrestling in front of 200 fans in Nagano, Yamato and Susumu might technically be better, but the younger guys and the ageless Mochizuki, they have an energy that is a little bit more welcoming to that environment. So I think last year had a better energy to the tournament, but also the story they're telling with Natural Vibes far exceeds anything that took place in last year's Rey de Parejas. And I don't know about you, but I had two different matches fall into my notebook from the Rey de Parejas set of matches this week.
You know, I had one that was clearly match of the weekend, and really, well, we need to talk about man of the tournament at that point with that one match, but it's something where, like, I ended up with a couple of 3.5, 3.75. It was not a bad week, per se. It was something, though, that this week did kind of gravitate around Natural Vibes, but when you have three tag teams in the tournament, you kind of have an ability to do so where really, the lights can go away from Luis Monte and Hio for a little bit, and you get to see the story kind of play out and play out in such a way where really it's the established tag teams of KZ and UT and the Kung Fu Masters, Jackie Funky Kamei and Jason Lee. It's not that they're not finding success. They are, but they're basically falling apart as they do so. Whereas Strong Machine J and Big Boss Shimizu have kind of gelled in this really fun package that, as we're entering the penultimate week of matches for Rey de Parejas, I think it's so fascinating the way that they've been able to kind of do this balancing act and kind of tell this compelling story at a point where it really, like, it's kind of coincidental that this unit has six people in it, but it's almost like lining up in such a way where one can see, I don't think that's what I would do, but one can see you can throw all six of them into a cage. And I feel like the build at this point has been deserving of that almost.
I think the way they're going about this is brilliant. And part of that is because I can't figure out for the life of me what they're going to end up doing. And I've sort of had this issue with Kamei specifically for the last 6 months, ever since Big Hug formed. And it seemed like they really wanted Kamei to be in their unit. I was like, you know, I enjoy the story they're telling. I find the promo segments to be compelling, but I really don't know where they're going to finish this off with. And if you extend that to the greater Natural Vibes, I don't know where they're going with it, but I'm so entirely okay by it, because I could see a scenario where 2 months from now, it's Natural Vibes versus Z-Brats in a unit disbands match, and Vibes wins the match, they come out stronger than ever, all six guys remain in the unit, and we go forward. And, you know, I also see a scenario in which Jason Lee turns heel, or Jackie Funky Kamei turns heel, or Strong Machine J turns heel, and the unit comes to an end. And it's just, it feels like the possibilities are endless. But I do think beat for beat in this tournament, again, the vibe stuff they're doing on a show in, show out basis is stronger than anything they had going on in terms of any sort of storytelling aspect last year. And it just so happens that Shimizu and Jay have been a phenomenal tag team. Again, Big Boss Shimizu is, you're talking about maybe the third greatest tag team wrestler in Dragon Gate history behind Naruki Doi and Yamato. Jay has been awesome. You've got Kung Fu Masters, who are far and away the best tag team in the world this year. I don't even think anybody is close right now. And then you have KZ and UT, who I thought going into the tournament would be sort of a throwaway team. They'd have some good matches. UT would eat a bunch of pinfalls and we'd move on. But man, they have been not only show stealers, but now I think they have a real good chance to finish second in their block and enter a semifinals match.
Yeah, so it's something where like that is kind of the difference in Rey de Parejas 2023. Your storyline kind of consideration, like Susumu and Kanda doing well was not a surprise. It just was, wow, it keeps on going. Like, it was not a surprise, at least in February and March of 2023, that was kind of the story here. And that by having that kind of story, you're able to have like your random Kung Fu Masters versus the Mochizukis matches on house shows that just out of nowhere have face melters. And it's just not that kind of tournament this year. It is a tournament to kind of play into storylines. And I think there's also an aspect of it that at least a couple of the venues that they were at over the week, it was not really cold venues, not necessarily lively crowds, except for certain parts and certain people. And I feel like that also has impacted things. Whereas last year, I mean, I remember how small the venue was for Kung Fu Masters and the Mochizukis, and it felt like that the building was almost like folding in on itself. It was so loud, and it's just not that kind of tournament.
No, it is weird where, you know, they haven't had a televised Rey de Parejas show since the Cork, and last year they had a Fukuoka double shot that hit the network, and then, you know, they ended up rounding things out in Kobe like they're doing this year. But you're missing sort of a quintessential building to be in this tournament. So there's been quite a large gap between your traditional Dragon Gate venues and your house show venues. I certainly have noticed how sparse some of these venues have looked. I don't have the ability Tsurugi. At this point. Say that again.
Tsuraga.
Yeah.
Particularly, but which was awful until you saw the other side of the building where they weren't having the camera on all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't have the ability to analyze what that means compared to last year, nor do I really want to read too much into, you know, a week or two of house shows when everything up, you know, everything else rather has shown signs of life. So it's just one of those things where maybe just for whatever reason, these shows haven't drawn well in the very, very small markets that they run. But, you know, I'm super into it. I mean, the vibe stuff is great. Let me ask you, I've got a few big picture vibes things that I want to kind of throw at you before we break down some of these individual matches, because I do want to talk individually about a few of these. But, you know, if we are to assume, and I think it's a safe assumption, even though we said this in 2021 and then in 2022 and then in 2023, I think we're heading towards some sort of vibes disbands match. And it might be them and Gold Class and Z-Brats, or it might be them and Z-Brats and sort of an all-out war. I don't know what the specifics are, but if you found out, hey, Natural Vibes are 100% being booked in a unit disbands match, and Z-Brats is involved in that match in one capacity or another, would you put your money on Z-Brats surviving or Natural Vibes surviving right now?
Well, the safe bet is always bet on the heel unit. But it is something where that I don't know how many disbands matches there have been in the history of the Dragon system, but the heel unit has only lost twice. So I feel like you would still naturally like you. How does Z-Brats or how does Natural Vibes overcome that is the question that when you keep that data point in mind. And I think the thing that you have is this heel unit that has basically been on the short end of the roster its entire existence. And you can make arguments that, okay, you can have some turns happen in the, and the, throughout the match, and someone gets turned on to lose the match, and then you have a new heel unit coming out of the remainders and the people that turned. Like, that's how you say, okay, how does Z-Bratz lose this match? That's really kind of the textbook scenario there. But it is something where all of this happens from the, like, that's all from the Z-Bratz side. Like, that's how it happens for them. Natural Vibes does not necessarily have the discord or the kind of discord that would have happened with the Jimmys, where the Jimmys would be tearing each other apart going into a certain kind of thing like this case, like a combat mode. There's no combat mode Natural Vibes. There is no really kind of like this. It's a lot of crossfire. And I feel like then you say, like, oh, how does Natural Vibes then lose that match? It's probably crossfire. So you're either looking at a setup, probably to set up a new larger heel unit coming out of the match, if you're thinking Z-Bratz loses, or you, it's going to be like the ultimate crossfire, or someone finally getting fed up of all the crossfires and walking away for Natural Vibes, I feel like.
I think that's all a very fair assessment. I think the domination of the heel units and unit disbands matches really has to be noted. I'm really starting to be concerned with the state of the industry as a whole, and the fact that outside of, you know, DDT bringing in an idol or an anniversary show or a retirement show, we're not really seeing any encouraging spikes in the industry. And maybe this is just an example of me being impatient and wanting to see things out, but I still don't really feel like anybody is trending in a great direction. They might be crawling in the right direction, but there's no company in Japan right now that feels like they've got things locked down. You know, I think All Japan had a great 2023. Quality-wise, I think they've had a strong 2024, but unless I'm missing something, it's not like their business is white hot, maybe as it was at the end of last year.
And the ground's not stable there.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I think Dragon Gate is healthy-ish, but they are a company with no strong corporate financial backing, and they could certainly be healthier. Noah's a disaster. I was right about that all along. New Japan, who knows what's going on there? I mean, it seems like when they book a match that the crowd actually gives a shit about, they're able to bring fans into the building, but it's not a guaranteed sellout nor a guaranteed draw for any show they have now. I bring this up because you can never overestimate the comfort of familiarity. And I really think with the industry still being in the state that it's in, and I'm not saying that it needs to be these six guys in Natural Vibes. I think Kamei can go out and form his own unit. I think Strong Machine J could go out and form his own unit. But the branding of Natural Vibes, the dancing of Natural Vibes, the consistent quality, the fact that they continue to be the clubhouse leader in terms of great matches per unit in this company, I think it is far too risky to get rid of that right now. And it helps that the unit is great. You know, I think they're firing all cylinders, but I'm just having a hard time imagining being in the Dragon Gate office, having that proverbial pencil with the chaos and commotion that still surrounds Japan, and thinking like, you know what, we're going to do away with our most visible and recognizable and honestly one of the most memorable acts in company history. I think they live to fight another day no matter what scenario that they're placed in going forward. It's just a matter of whether it's going to be these six guys or if it's whittled down to five and then four, and then they find new guys to fill in those gaps.
And really, I mean, the history of the unit is around KZ. So as long as KZ is a babyface, going along with your argument, there should be a Natural Vibes because he's there. Because they've brought people in. I mean, they've essentially done full online changes. KZ is the only original member of Natural Vibes. Like, it's just how that operates there. And yeah, like the idea that I feel like safety blanket has been the tendency in this market for the last 18 months. And as we see other things happening, it's still kind of going back to their safety blanket. And it's going to, you can have that safety blanket for so long. And I feel like that we will probably eventually each promotion have to come to a point where they realize that, hey, turn around and Dragon Kid's in his 50s, or turn around and Kazuchika Okada left and you're only have one star that's in great health from your boom era, what are you doing? Like the, at a certain point, the safety blanket is not enough and the safety blanket doesn't work anymore. And I feel like that the more that everyone's kind of playing into that, and that's not even necessarily because a statement for Natural Vibes is a safety blanket unit. I don't think that, that's kind of the case. I think it's more of the familiarity and having an easy kind of analog for KZ is a good reason. Is a good reason to keep this unit around, and then, I don't know, move in a Nagano at that point and bring up other people into this unit. Like, that's what's been the purpose of Natural Vibes from the start.
I would love to know, to have the crystal ball and the ability to say, if Yoshioka hadn't gotten hurt when he did, if D-Courage 2 years in would have had a similar level of credibility and familiarity, because 2022, like we screamed about, you know, they were the main characters, they were the drive and focus of this promotion. 2023, Kakuta obviously had the Dreamgate belt, but, you know, choppy waters there for a little bit of time. Had Yoshioka not gotten hurt, I would question, hey, do you need both D-Courage and Vibes in that sort of comfort right. blanket role? But D-Courage, it just doesn't have the stability that Vibes has.
And I think, like, if we are going to continue with the idea of Yoshioka being healthy, then you're probably not having the other side of this weekend, which is a lot of Ryukyu, Dragon, Shuri, Joe, and Mizuku Tominaga matches. You would probably have that second D-Courage team in that A-block spot, and I feel like that would change the entire complexion of this unit, of this tournament.
Let me ask you this. I've kind of had this thought for a while now. Haven't known when to bring it up. I'll bring it up here since we're doing a big picture Natural Vibes thing. If they were to lose a unit disbands match, let's say it's the... I'll use very specific timing here. Let's say in May, they lose a unit disbands match. I don't think that'll happen, but just stick with this example. They lose a unit disbands match in May. Do you think the June tour would be a goodbye Natural Vibes tour, much like they did with the Jimmies, where they do one last dance at every town? Do you think they've earned that level of status?
I think that you probably, at the very least, if it's not becoming the goodbye Natural Vibes tour, it is something where you do a farewell around the loop. And especially, the fact that it's a little bit of cold service if it happens at that time, because then you're not doing a farewell for KZ and Sapporo because you've already done that triple shot at that point. You know, like that's the thing that's going to happen, is that when you have a unit that's this long and this beloved, like, and when you're a company like this one, you're going to want to sell a whole lot of farewell Natural Vibe towels when that happens. And you're going to want to go take those towels to KZ's hometown and sell the whole lot of them. So that's going to be an issue. How do you kind of capitalize on that? And because of the fact that, funny enough, like this United Japan altogether Sapporo show, like that would be kind of the time you were kind of go like, hey guys, do you mind if we do a Natural Vibes thing on this show? You know, like that's where you would have to do it at. You know,
do you want to do that real quick? I know you want to talk about that in your stream tomorrow, but do you want to do a quick United Japan thing since that news broke today?
Yeah, so they had the big United Japan press conference. It was on Abima, but everyone syndicated it on their own media. They announced an altogether show happening on May 16th, I believe is the date. I don't have the date in front of me. It is for like announcing the beginning of All Japan Pro Wrestling Group, however you want to kind of call this thing, as well as a charity for the recent Kodo earthquakes. They announced three matches. The one really of note is there is a current or new generation six-man tag that has Shun Skywalker here. They've said that more matches will come out. And the second show with promotions that are not able to be on this all-together show, most notably All Japan, Tokyo Joshi, and I believe there's one more that was not able to be announced for this one. That's going to be like focus going to the Sapporo show. And I guess, Case, I'm trying to find a way to volley this to you to set this up back more for me. But like, what was your big takeaway about this morning? Oh, or really, I guess for you, you would have been up while this press conference was happening.
Oh, don't remind me. You know, look, you're way more heated about this than I am, which thinks makes me think maybe I'm missing something. The match we got with Shun, which is Shun and Takeshita and Uemura versus Shota and Kiyomiya and Yuki Ueno, that's kind of what I was expecting from this. I'm amazed Dragon Gate is involved, period. To me, that is a win because they've always been shunned from altogether shows. But I don't have a problem with it, at least with the information I have now. But you might know more than I do.
I just have kind of a bad taste about this kind of thing. And let me kind of put this from multiple ways. So this group was announced at the peak of COVID, basically from, at the time, Minister Hiroshi Hase. Yes, that one. Basically, who was a part of the ruling coalition at that time, basically said, like, hey, you need to have like some sort of commission for us to really deal with, like, instead of dealing with individual companies, and then of course like the scales of companies from like your Bushiroads down to your 2AWs, you know, like the, like that was the thing that was like happening at that time. And then basically Hase said like y'all should form some sort of group, and that is something that has kind of gone at least ever since then, it has really been strongly pushed by both Bushiroad and Cyberfight being the two big conglomerates there. But they have also have had since then coming outside of those promotions, like All Japan, Dragon Gate, and Big Japan are a part of this as well. So the thing for me is like I go from two different things about this. First and foremost, this is something that I think that if you're talking about forming a commission and you're looking at some of the real issues that happen in that wrestling scene, doing just basically all together, but now we're including the other promotions that we don't usually include, really reeks of GPWA and all the promises that were lifted there, and then Dragon Gate getting involved in that. And that just basically turned out to be a way that Pro Wrestling Noah wanted to have other things happening on some of their shows and didn't really evolve from that. So first and foremost, that's one of my big issues is like, how is this really actually affecting change? Because to me, looking at this, like, yes, absolutely. Like the outreach and the charity and the fundraising for the areas that had the earthquakes. Absolutely. There's a rich tradition of that. That's not my issue with this whatsoever. It is when you promise to kind of put together a group like this, and this is kind of the result. And it's safety blanket again. To me, it reeks the same. And if I'm a smaller promotion, I'm not saying that this is a case for Dragon Gate here, case. But if I'm going to be like someone that's going to get involved with United Japan, I have to kind of look at what the state of the industry is and wonder, okay, a lot of this is being run by New Japan, who's been doing a lot of kind of outreachy like things with the Frontier Zone things. But as this has been a promotion that has a lot of its own issues up top, like trying to find star power. If I'm a smaller promotion case, I am being real hesitant about wanting to get involved in what could just be a giant recruiting scheme. Because if this is it, that's kind of what it comes off to me like.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get those vibes the way that you do. I mean, I was expecting a pretty boilerplate charity show from the jump. I don't have any information that says anything otherwise. You know, I don't know, just because everybody is struggling. I mean, you know, New Japan to some degree is still succeeding, but it's not like they're crushing it like they were pre-pandemic. I think their idea from the jump has been, hey, let's get some bodies in the room and maybe make something of this. But I'm not bothered by the shows by any means.
And don't get me wrong, it's much better to be inside the room than to be outside the room with something like this. Like,
I think it's very interesting politically that Dragon Gate got the bump and that Glate didn't.
Yeah, well, I think that there's pretty good reason for that.
Say what you will about Shima, but he still has his allies, and Minoru Tanaka very much has allies.
But I think that when you like look at like the names of the industry, Glate, by and large, I wonder if you did like a general poll like this, like of people wondering what like Shima is up to, or like this, like the overall Q score of it, it probably is so low that it does not really merit inclusion. If you think about it that way.
What'd they do on that Korakuen show, 600?
500.
Oh my God. But it looked like it too.
So like the one thing that also, I guess it also kind of in a way creates a have and have not in the industry, which I mean, hey, for Dragon Gate, now you're a have. If this United Japan becomes something that might have some sort of government funding behind it and something like that, like that was kind of that I was hoping to see something new, I guess, personally. And that was one of the big like, kind of sour notes for me with that. And, you know, I mean, it's something where I feel like that having like these groups together, it does make me wonder about like this is going to be on a BEMA pay-per-view and all of that. Like the fact that it's like if this was going to be like a real like fundraising thing, like I get a BEMA biggest platform and they're going to do a BEMA pay-per-view that way, or at least that's what it seems to indicate. But wouldn't this be something that like all the platforms and everyone's like own services and their own media partners want to get involved with as well?
That is an intriguing point. Absolutely. Yeah.
So like,
but also do you think the Dragon Gate Network has the bandwidth or wherewithal or capability to support a simulcast?
Well, I mean, like for the people that probably would be watching it through the network because they don't really go on a BEMA, and like the if you're going with the idea that the Dragon Gate audience is its own kind of thing, like I feel like that there would be interest in like at least that way you get the Dragon Gate eyes on it that might not be there because they don't follow other pro wrestling.
I'm delighted, not to talk in circles here, but you know, not only is Dragon Gate included, but I mean, Shun got real respect in that six man. That's, you know, that's a main event. It's a loaded match.
Yeah, I guess, and it's something where like now he gets to kind of join the list of Dragon Gate guys who have wrestled in Budokan. Like that was a fun kind of conversation popping off in the Voices of Wrestling Discord, the Dragon Gate channel, about the fact that M2K did a whole lot of All Japan shows in the 99 and 2000s. And that ended up having them at some Budokan shows. And then Dragon Gate, I think at that point, 2007, that would have been GHC junior tag matches happening at the Budokan as well, with Dragon Gate as a part of that title.
Did Shima wrestle the Marufuji Noah six-man? Was that in Budokan? Let me look that up real quick. Because Shima popped in for one Noah match that was like super heated. That was Budokan. Shima, Dragon Kid, and Susumu versus Ipe Ota, shout out Naomichi Marufuji and Ricky Marvin on April 28th, 2007. That's a great match if you've never seen it.
Big typhoon energy there.
Big typhoon energy. So that raises another question, and we'll get back to Day Parejas in a second, but this intrigues me because you were talking about Dragon Gate wrestlers in Budokan. Think about Dragon Gate wrestlers wrestling interpromotional matches real quick. So you have M2K in All Japan. You have Shima and Noah. You have very briefly both Yoshino and Ultimo in the 2003 Differ Cup, and then Yoshino and Doi in 2007-2008 with the GHC junior tag belts. You have those guys in Noah. And then you have BB Hulk, Yamato, Ricochet, and to some degree Eita doing Super Juniors tournaments. Is Skywalker being what I presume is the main event of this first show here, is that the most respect Dragon Gate has ever received in an interpromotional match or feud or show? Because outside of Ricochet winning the Super Juniors when he was still technically a Dragon Gate wrestler, I'm struggling to think of who might have been treated better.
So let's put the Ricochet stuff on the side.
And I guess Pac too, because you know Pac was so heavily scouted in 2012 when he did that Super Juniors tournament.
Right, yeah. So the Ricochet 2014, where like you could add in like the Bola thing as well to that. We'll put that off to the side. I would say Shima 99, Super Jacob.
That's true. That's a good one. That's a good one because that was, I mean, it was the lesser of the three Jacobs at that point historically, but it was still, it wasn't a 2023 Jacob offshoot. It was still the mother effing Jacob.
And it was for a lot of ways because how at least Dragon Gate and Toriumon, like as we've talked about in Rewind and Rewatch, have been at least at those times more towards the All Japan side, at least in 99 and 2000. The fact that you also had Shima versus Jushin Thunder Liger happen in Sumo Hall at that time, like that was a huge kind of step in like the different kind of audience, if you think about that.
I mean, it's, I think it really helped put Shima on the right track, and it's a real sliding glass doors moment of, you know, had Magnum not been hurt, what Magnum would have done in that tournament too. But I mean, Shima steals the show. When I think of that J Cup, I think of Shima.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it, that's the big kind of, I would say, the one-to-one there is probably that performance. And even when you look at it that way, and I did a show with WH Park about Shima during this match during Liger's retirement tour.
And
Shima,
I did WH Park show talking about Eita versus Liger from, yeah, 16 years after the fact.
Yeah. Funny enough, Liger working this way. But if you look at where Shima was in 99 and where Shu now is in 2024, 25 years later, Shima, outside of Toriumon circles and outside of people who would have watched like Michinoku Pro, wasn't necessarily like that kind of entity, or at least outside of that bubble. And whereas Shun Skywalker, I mean, say what you will about how at least the Tokyo Sports and all of that have operated, at least in there, the conglomerate, whenever they do the yearbook, at least since he came back from excursion, Shun Skywalker is one of the few Dragon Gate inclusions on the cover. So I think that it's something where like he's already kind of coming in at a higher level, and that helps him out, at least in treatment thereof in this kind of match.
The Shima thing is interesting. It's why I find the Noah match that I just mentioned to be so interesting, because you like, you go back and watch M2K and All Japan, and this is still not to be crass, but you're talking about quite literally the corpse of Baba's All Japan at times. It's not a hipster All Japan crowd. So the M2K stuff, I mean, maybe 5% of the crowd is into it, but they don't exactly get the warmest reception. The thing with Shima is, he, you know, if he was going to venture outside of Dragon Gate, for the most part, it was to America or to the United States or to Mexico. In Japan, he never really has a prolonged New Japan run while he's in Dragon Gate, and he never really works Noah except for that one match, which, like I said, it's Shima, Dragon Kid, and Susumu versus Ota, Marufuji, and Ricky Marvin. And the thing that is so interesting is Shima specifically is treated with respect in that match, because when he and Marufuji face off, Budokan goes nuts. They recognize that as being a big deal, but Shima never really left the nest enough to have any sort of great foresight as to whether or not this was a one-time occasion, or if this is the way that he would have been treated had he taken regular bookings outside of Dragon Gate.
Yeah, and also, like, we have to, like, look at it in the aspect of, especially up until 2008 and what happened with, like, Shima after 2008 and the kind of injuries and, like, where they would crop up and when they would crop up in a way, sometimes a little suspicious, sometimes very much like, oh, man, Shima was going to be here for this kind of thing. Whereas, like, and I feel like that kind of goes into play with it as well, at a time where, like, he, I mean, basically after 2005, like, if you're talking about where his second place was, it was already United States. So it becomes like priority shift, while also being like Shima starts falling apart a little bit in the late aughts. Then that makes things a little difficult, especially when, like, at a time where I feel like 2007 through like 2010, there was like more and more kind of, if not like appearances, it felt like that at least the health of Dragon Gate was very apparent whenever there was cooperation where other promotions were not necessarily in that spot at that time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, obviously, Shima got a ton of respect in the Bolas, and, you know, PWG treated them great, and ROH treated them great. But Japan specifically, I think this is, I don't think it's a sign of anything that Dragon Gate has done. I think it's a testament to Shun. And this has kind of been my overarching point this year that we'll revisit sort of on a monthly basis. Is like, look, I think he's really established himself as a canonically important figure within the history of this promotion. And the way the world works now, and the way we consume news and are constantly finding something new, it's hard to let that sink in. But I think when we look back at the end of 2024, between this stuff and the title runs and the stuff he's doing with Kamei and Jason Lee, I mean, you know, again, you start to chisel in that Dragon Gate Mount Rushmore, and I'm not saying Shun Skywalker's on the list, but man, he might be on deck. He might be in the hole. He's closer than I think a lot of people realize to that.
Yeah. And it's something where also the company is at a time where he's becoming more and more that public figure, and kind of like in a way that I mean, compare this even to last year with the All-Star Junior Festival that happened at FLAC. It was all about Yamato being there, Yamato being the flag bearer, Yamato being the guy and actually like agreeing to do this sort of thing.
And now, that was largely by way of Yamato shooting his own angle on Twitter.
Right. Now it's Shun doing the angles with Mr. Nagamori, the Luck Corporation. It is Shun kind of being that kind of figure that kind of in a way, yes, he is like the biggest heel in the company, but he's become like such like the public figure and kind of being that dude where his inclusion, like when we get into talking about WrestleMania stuff in a little bit, like his inclusion doesn't feel weird that he's a heel now. It's like, of course, if you're having Dragon Gate there, you have to have Shun Skywalker. He's kind of, this year has been the year where he's really inherited that role pretty well.
And if you think about it and compare it to Shima, you know, Shima, oh, whether it was Crazy Max or Blood Generation or even Blood Warriors, you know, a lot of his most visible stuff was done with him as a heel.
No, absolutely. It does feel like that you do that kind of run and then you see what happens when you turn face after.
And that's, you know, I mean, I don't think we're too far off from perhaps even a babyface Shun and Jackie Funky Kame tag team. And, you know, if that moment ever happens or when that face turn happens, it's going to be absolutely massive. The incredible thing with Shun is that I have no desire to see that. You know, he's been a heel for 2 years, and it doesn't feel like we've in any way fleshed out this character to where there's no more to go. I feel like it's only up from here.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, wow, we're almost at this point where like not Z-Bratz is not the time. Like it is still down the road a bit, but the thought did cross my mind this week and like getting us back towards Rey de Parejas.
Yes, please. Sorry about
getting
that.
Getting us back towards some of the matches that we had, that we have this huge match coming up in Kobe between Shun and Ishin and Kung Fu Masters. And it's something where now every bit of this last week, even where Jack was not involved with it or in the match, like even like the best thing happening in Fukui, just going through 320. So there was a Yoshida Mochizuki match. It was kind of there. Team Muscle versus Ryukyu Dragon. It went to a time limit draw. There was a lot of Tomonaga there that got Team Muscle their first point and got Ryukyu Dragon on the board. But the real match of the night was this Yamasusu team, just that's just what I've written down in my notes for them, up against Shun and Ishin. A box attack and a Jackie knife from Shun onto Susumu gets Shun and Ishin the win. JFK makes the immediate save afterwards. They're finding ways to kind of weave the story, even though Jack has no reason really to be a part of it. And Fukui, other than the fact that Shun's now stealing his moves.
I'm going to give a hot take real quick, which is that I enjoyed the Team Muscle Ryukyu Dragon match more than I did the Yamato Susumu versus Z-Bratz match. Something about that main event just did not click with me whatsoever from an in-ring standpoint. And although 20 minutes of Punch Tamanaga and Shiri Joe is a daunting task, and I'm not even saying I would recommend it, it was actually way better than it looks on paper.
Man, it just was. It was also this building, too, that made that match really grind on me. I was only 2.25 on that Shiri Joe match.
Yeah, see, I was 3.25. I did not mind it at all. It was 20 minutes of them trying to pin Tamanaga and him just kind of surviving move after move, which I eventually got into.
That is the thing about Mazoku Tomonaga. He's like 25% stronger.
Yeah. what an honor.
I mean, but that's like really it. Like,
yeah. No,
we've had to
watch
a lot of Tomonaga this week. Like,
we did watch a lot of Tomonaga this week.
Brother, we could tell you the differences between this version of Punch Tomonaga, Mazoku Tomonaga, Team Boku Tomonaga after this week. Like, I've had enough exposure to him to know what
makes you wonder what you're doing with your life.
Seriously, man.
Anyways, I did not love this main event. It's interesting as it got Shun and Ishin a win here and prevented Yamato and Susumu from going undefeated, but I did not love this match. This is not one that I found on my there's an obvious spreadsheet match I have, then there's one that I think I'm going to surprise people with. It was not this match, though.
Yeah, this was where the building and everything really hurt. Like, two of my three matches, our notes here are talking about Shun trying to get this crowd into it, the building. Like, it was the most the crowd kind of got into it was when Shun was doing, like, crazy brawling with Yamato throughout it. But this really was Ishin, like, working his ass off because Shun was just doing Shun things, essentially. I enjoyed that, and I thought the finish was really smart there. But as you pointed out, this kept Shun and Ishin alive and prevented Yamato from making Yamato and Susumu making the clean sweep. They finished their tournament at 3-1-1. And then we move on to Tsuragi. Looking at the matches real quick from the shows and Tsuragi, we had No Hug versus Ryukyu Dragon. It was the Doi Bible on No Hug. They get up to 6 points. Strong Machine J and Simizu versus Agon Iso go to a time limit draw as well. And then they had the other stuff happened on the next night. I'm trying to think what their third match they had. I'm trying to get my notes to move forward.
On that show, it was Vibes. What was it on that show? It was...
I did not have a note on that match. That's what happened.
What was that? 323?
323, yeah.
It was Ishin, Kai, and Skywalker versus Jason Lee, Casey, and UT, which was a pretty fun six-man.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun six-man, kind of pushing things along there. But I really liked this time limit draw that happened on this night, guys. I was 3.5.
4 stars, brother. Put it on the board.
I'm with you. I could see myself in a different world being 4 stars on this. This rocked.
I fucking love this match. I was so impressed by the unrelenting asshole nature of one Toru Awashi in this match. Kondo was normally very good. I think typically I'm a little bit higher on Kondo than you are. I love Shimizu. I love Strong Machine J. I thought they brought it. I'll talk about them in just a second. This was Toru Awashi for the first time in a long time putting his working boots on. I thought he was marvelous in this match.
And his chemistry he had with Shimizu.
Outstanding.
These two guys. And Shimizu had himself a pair of days this weekend. When we get into Buyuden, like, think about, like, he went from that match into Tsuraga into doing that here. Just a real, like, brutal week for the guy. But, yeah, Toru Awashi rocked in this. Strong Machine J as kind of like this grinding dick is really fun. And I felt like it was the right kind of energy to go up against this Agon Iso team that I've really kind of enjoyed in this tournament. It's been something where I know that we are the divergent people on Toru Awashi, but it is something where, like, hey, you put him back here again and it works. It is something where you have him facing off constantly with Big Boss Shimizu throughout this match, and it is a lot of piss and vinegar. It's a lot of guys just colliding with each other. It's a lot of big heavyweight wrestling, which is what I think Dragon Gate secretly has done really well over the last year. And they really built to a wild finish with that there was that upkick in the closing moments of the match.
Yes.
That was one of the nastiest things that have happened all week. It was amazing. Like, you've talked me into, like, jumping this match up. Like, why am I saying this is 3.5 stars?
No, it was super fun.
Yeah, it's a 4-star match.
And that's the thing is, like, I you know, the next night they wrestled the Ryukyu Dragon team, and that wasn't, you know, it wasn't any good. It was fine. I certainly enjoyed, actually, I enjoyed the Team Muscle versus Ryukyu Dragon match more. But the Agon Iso team, up to this point, they had the Chaos Brawl with Kai and Valletta and Cork and Hall, and then they had this big meaty match here on this show, the 20-minute time limit draw, where I wasn't expecting it to go to a time limit. I was sort of shocked by this finish and the fact that they would send Awashi and Kondo out there for as long as they did. I have no complaints with this team so far, so we still need to see them wrestle Team Muscle and No Hug, is that correct?
Yes, so they have Team Muscle and Kobe, and then they have the next night No Hug, and that'll probably be their elimination and no hugs advancement, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real chance all but the Ryukyu Dragon matches at the very least serve a purpose and at best are very, very good. This has been one of those things that, again, I saw from the beginning where I was just like, oh, you know, they're kind of in the right block. You know, I wouldn't want Kondo and Awashi in the B block where it's the smaller junior heavyweight sort of bantamweight style wrestlers. I don't want them there. They're in the perfect block because Shimizu and Strong Machine J, I mean, let's face it, this was closer to like an All Japan, like a modern All Japan yes. style match mm-hmm. than it was a Dragon Gate match. But I welcome it because Strong Machine J can hang in that environment, and obviously Big Boss Shimizu can hang in that environment as well.
Yeah, it was something where whenever the company has not necessarily parried, but have decided to drop like the Lucha-esque pretense and go with is the best use of their wrestlers, which I feel like happened really well here. When you let people thrive in the environment that works well for them, like it translates over and it does not feel at all bizarre in a tournament and a promotion that has such a distinctive style like this. And it's something where like I wouldn't have put Agane So in that B block to begin with, because you kind of already have your two like huge babyface teams in there, and you don't really need to have more ugliness happening with that. Like you have Shun and Ishin there for that as well, but real strong show. I would say like there's enough interesting things about this Tsuraga show that I feel like it was not like the knock them dead weekend that I felt like that. I've been kind of waiting for like two or three house shows in a row that I've been like, all right, here we go. It's not that kind of tournament, but I thought that Tsuraga was ended up being a whole lot of fun.
I would watch that Vibes Zebrat six man, and then I would watch this main event with the volume up, because I think it's really important that the Awashi strikes, the chops and the kicks. I would really let those sink in, and I think that really takes this match up another level.
Yeah, like they're just brutal. Brutal things and that with it. And then
I'm glad you liked that to any sort of degree in the way that I did, because I didn't know if I was going to be on an island, but I watched that today and it just has a nice build to it. It has a nice bit of physicality to it. And the last 5 minutes or so are a true Dragon Gate tag team match. I mean, they elevate and execute in a really magnificent way.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And you could tell that the crowd was getting into it. There was the guy in the front row who just started cackling at the chop exchange, like especially like right after. There was one that Awashi did that was just gross. It was just a real brutal thing there. And then they moved on to Nagano. On the upload, we had another Natural Vibe and Zebrats match. This one, six man tag, KZ, Shimizu, Strong Machine J versus Shun, Kai, and Ishin. It is a school boy from Shun over Kai or Shun over KZ here in this one. And just all throughout the show, the real nadir of Natural Vibes is this Nagano show. Like I don't think Natural Vibes has been as down bad as they were on this show.
No, I would skip the middle portion. I would skip that next Agane Isu match where they wrestle the Ryukyu Dragon team. I almost went notebook on this trios match, and it was, I think, designed to sort of be a throwaway trios match, but the chemistry there was so strong that I went 3 3/4 there. And then you have, you know, again, the nothing Agane Isu match and then this main event, which I have a feeling you're going to want to talk about.
Yeah, so the main event, this B block match and Rey de Parejas. Kung Fu Masters walking in 1-2 with 2 points versus the D-Courage team Kakuta and Daya 1-1-1 at 3 points. It is a Jackie Knife at 18:09 on Dragon Daya for Kung Fu Masters to get the win here. They move to 4 points. They stay alive at this, but this is after a moment in the closing stretch where Yaki gets bumped, and that brings out Zebrats. Zebrats, primarily Shun, managed to get a Jason chop and a Jackie shove, completely get them out of sorts into a DDDDT, where somehow Jack is able to kick out, go right into the Jackie Knife finish. Really, like, match, I felt like that I was going to get real aggravated when the ref bump happened, but they were able to kind of play that off, that at least this one night Jack was able to kind of be ahead of it and was able to make it work for him. But at afterwards that just was absolute, just model and natural vibes. It's not a good time for natural vibes closing down shows.
I mean, look, we've talked extensively this year about Toriumon and the difference in the house style between some of the great Toriumon matches and some of the great Dragon Gate matches. And I specifically applaud something like Shima versus Mochizuki, the 2001 hair versus hair match, as dare I say, the Attitude Era done right, where it is, you know, in a shell, a great professional wrestling match, but they also have ref bumps and run-ins, and it's a car wreck and a train crash, and it's just absolute madness. And it all works in this beautiful style. And this match got pretty close to it. The Z-Brats run-in, I thought, was perfectly timed. I love the fact that you have this D-Courage versus Natural Vibes match, and with everything you have going on with Vibes, Skywalker somehow inserts himself into this match and causes more friendly fire between Jason Lee and Jackie Funky Kamei. It's such a risk to do something like that, because it could fall flat on its face, and it could be unnecessary noise, and it could be a thing that doesn't stick at all. And it absolutely did. And this is a rare, rare, rare instance where a ref bump in an extended run-in, not just a run-in, but an extended run-in where Shun Skywalker, again, basically became the fifth member of this match. It is a rare instance where something like that, I think, elevated what was already a top-of-the-line tag team match.
Yeah, so before that, Hedin Yaveo Jack in the first, like, 5 minutes. It's something where, like, I feel like we really need to give some flowers to Dragon Daya, and probably one of the best baby faces in peril working today, if not the last 5 or 10 years, because this the crux of this match was basically Kakuta was the mood changer, but Kung Fu Masters were able to consistently get Daya down and do work to them until Kakuta was able to get in there, and he really threw his weight around. It's something that's wild case. I've always had issues with Kamei and Kakuta because they are not a good tag team. They do not have good tag team chemistry, but the two of them, when they're on opposite sides, they are great. And it's something I'd wish, I would hope for a little better chemistry between the two people remaining out of that class. But I was nice to see, like, the whoopee cushion Jack does in this match, man, is insane.
Well, I mean, my God, Kakuta just beat the shit out of him.
Right, yeah.
It was violent.
It was like, let's beat the hell out of Dragon Daya for 3 or 4 minutes. He gets a tag in Kakuta, and Kakuta just comes in like a cement truck and just runs.
I do really like that style of Kakuta, and it's going to be a weird comp. I'm not saying it's fully like this, but what it does remind me of is Kakuta sort of hits a mode every once in a while that is very similar to, like, peak zombie Ibushi, where, you know, classic Ibushi singles match, and he just all of a sudden he's dead behind the eyes, and he turns it on and he starts hitting guys really hard. Kakuta has a little bit of that, where at some point in these great matches, it becomes, oh, he's swinging lumber at your head. You know, he is rearing up and ready to go. And it always seems to add a little bit of depth and a new element to his matches.
And it's something where, especially with him and Jack, it's been needed. Because, yes, like, it's been almost disappointing how those two have been together. But this was perhaps their best, like, interaction, I feel like, in recent memory.
I would agree with that. And I think the other thing that's interesting to note as it pertains to Kakuta and Jason Lee is you have this match start with Kamei and Daya, and then Kakuta and Jason tag in. And maybe this is me making something out of nothing, but I don't know if you felt this way either. Just the way Jason presented himself and the way that he stood in the ring with Kakuta, obviously Kamei is receiving a heavyweight-esque push. They are considering him to be a main eventer now. But in the ring, you know, he and Daya wrestle like junior heavyweights. Jason Lee, standing across the ring from Madoka Kakuta, they looked like they could go blow for blow. I mean, they looked like Dragon Gate heavyweights, and that is just a testament to, one, the amount of weight and muscle that Jason has put on, but also, you know, I said this at the time, I thought he took a step back in ring in 2023 because he was learning how to work with all of that muscle. In 2024, I think he's figured it out.
Yeah, it's punching people. It's punching people as hard as possible.
Yeah.
but you're absolutely right. It's something where, like, I really noticed it this week with him. Like, he feels like a heavyweight. He looks like a heavyweight. He carries himself like a heavyweight. And I think the carrying himself really is the big difference from where he was as a junior and then as a transitioning junior into heavy and then into now, is he just knows how to carry himself a little bit better. And if it's just that he just stands up straight and just delivers a forearm, that's great. But it is something that pays off with, like, someone like Jack, because, like, you look at how Jack was in a match like this and how he was with his face offs against Kakuta. You have Jason, who's able to not necessarily always dish it out to him, but he started to develop the heavyweight chin, you know, the ability to kind of take a couple shots and dish them back. Jack, he'll never have the ability to develop that chin just because of weight wise and momentum and just the way that they work this so well. That what does Jack do as he's getting this push? Yes, he gets knocked down, but then he gets up and he's like the angriest person possible. And it just seems like it does not really even hurt him to do that. It's two completely different ways of kind of portraying yourself, and just ways that I think Kung Fu Masters, as now they're in really their third year as a tag team, they've really found this way to evolve. And especially, like, when you look at that, we are now almost 21 months since their five-star match. They're completely different wrestlers now, and they're still putting out work that, yes, this is not Kung Fu Masters versus Shun and Diamante at Kobe World, but this is seeing this team put out yet another 4.25, if not better, match that they've put on here, doing completely different stuff. And I think that that's remarkable.
I watched this match twice. I went 4.25 the first time, 4.5 the second time. I say this, of course, as we have not yet watched Young Bucks versus Private Party from the upcoming AEW Tag Team Tournament, because it hasn't happened yet. But with the caveat being that the Bucks are about to, what I would assume, be in a prolonged run in a tag team tournament.
I'm about to tweet at you, Case.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to tweet at you to post the damn link again.
I say this with that in mind, that, hey, I think the Bucks are about to go on a tear because they have finally shed the brawl out skin that had been suffocating them for 2 years. No one is even close to what Kamei and Lee are doing this year, because it's not only the Rey de Parejas matches, which I would have Kung Fu Masters versus Big Hug at 4.5. I would have Kung Fu Masters versus Daya and Kakuta at 4.5. And I would have Kung Fu Masters versus Susumu in Yamato at 4.25. And Kung Fu Masters versus KZ and UT at 4.25. You have to also mention Kung Fu Masters versus Alejandro and Kiyomiya from Gate of Bayside. So I have three 4.5 star matches, and I think 3 4.25 star matches from this team, and we're not even done with March yet. I mean, I don't, who else is in that conversation? I don't think unless I'm missing something, I don't think the Astronauts have had a great year, and just because of lack of opportunity, not because they've been bad. One of the Saito brothers is hurt. There's nobody. Say that again.
He's back now. They had to vacate the G Infinities for nothing.
Actually, no,
they did, because they wanted to show off Shima's new gear.
And rightfully so. It was maybe the coolest gear he's ever worn.
I love the Colicanth team because fat old Kaz Hayashi does it for me in some way. I can't describe it.
Look, fat old Shima does it for me. I completely understand where you're coming from. You know, CMLL's run a bunch of tag matches this year. Like, I love when Dorada and Neon team together, but it's not like they've had any prolonged run.
Too young in their run, I feel like.
I would agree with that as well. So we're a quarter of the way through the year, and I think Kung Fu Masters have a resume that most teams would win Tag Team of the Year on for a 12-month period. So I'm hoping, no matter what comes of Vibes and the tension there and the eventual fallout, I would like to think these guys can team together for the rest of the year, because they are just unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's something where, like, we're really getting to see this fun new evolution of this team, that I don't want this evolution to go away so soon. Like, I feel like there's still a lot of magic with that. Should we look at the blocks and preview what the league matches are for this weekend?
Please do.
So we're at this place now where, okay, so before we started going, I was about to do a full foldy sheet of what happens if this happens here and this happens there. It just, because Dragon Gate, they love both the time limit draw and the double count out. There's just too many different possible ideas here. But here's the thing, and here's how it's going to go in B block. So at Kobe Sambo Hall, we have Team Muscle, Kota Minora, and Benkei. They're already eliminated. They were eliminated weeks ago. They're at 1 point, but this is their last block match. And it's against the Agon Iso team of Toru Owashi and Shuji Kondo. That team is at 3. They do have two. They do have one other match that will be happening the next night against No Hug. So it's a situation where maybe Team Muscle should get that win there, knowing that it does not completely eliminate Agon Iso, because then they have a match then up against No Hug there the next night. And then the final match of the blocks happening next week. It's happening on the 6th. It's Big Boss Shimizu and a Strong Machine J. They're at 5, going up against Kai and Johnny Valletta. They're at 4. The overall standings for this block is No Hug at 6. Big Machine, Big Boss Shimizu, and Strong Machine J at 5. Kai and Johnny at 4. 3 points for Agon Iso, and then 1 point for both Kota Minora and Benkei and the Ryukyu Dragon team. Both of those teams are eliminated. So 3 matches, but the big story is going to be to see if it's going to be something where this Agon Iso team, they finally get their first actual win of the tournament. They can get upwards of 7 points. Kind of the ball is in their court there. So that's A block. What are you expecting out of those like 3 matches?
So am I correct in thinking that Kai and Valletta versus Shimizu and Jay, that could end up deciding one of the final placements in this block, right?
Yeah, it's something where they've basically booked this where Team Muscle and Ryukyu Dragon are the only ones that are outright eliminated. Essentially, what I would say, though, Case, is both of Shuji Kondo's matches are must-win. Like, they will be eliminated if they don't beat Team Muscle. But it can become a situation real quick where it's Big Hug, Big Machine, and Johnny and Kai. Those 3 fighting for those 2 spots, and that's where that April 6th match kind of comes.
Yeah, I would assume that's the scenario they go with.
Yeah, no, I am with that with you there. Let's look at B block, where we already have one of our semifinalists. Do you like Susu Yama or Yama Susu?
I like Susu Yama.
Susu Yama, let's go with that. They're at 7. They are 3-1-1. Their one loss is against Shun and Ishin. Probably will not play off in any sort of tiebreakers. Let's roll back and look at the rest of the blocks from there. We have all 5 other teams, Case, either at 3 or 4 points. 3 points is Big Hug, Luis Monte, and Hio. They do have 2 matches in hand, and it's not as dire of a scenario where they're both win and go home. At 3 points as well, D Courage, they have 1 match left. KZ and UT have 1 match as well, and then as we talked about, Kung Fu Masters and Shun and Kai, that's a 4 point versus 3 point matchup. That's the match on the 30th. The match on the 31st is Big Hug versus KZ and UT, and then the final match of block play is on the 7th, Big Hug versus D Courage.
Again, I'm having a real hard time figuring out what direction they want to go in this tournament. Obviously, Yamato and Susumu, they've clinched their spot. So tell me if I'm wrong here, because again, the math on this tournament's been tricky for me.
Right, because there's 4 real options in each match, because they are making the double count out a thing in the other block.
Yes, so Kung Fu Masters are mathematically alive, right?
Yes, they are. They're very much alive. They're tied for 2nd in the block with 1 match remaining up against Shun and Ishin. They're at 4 points. Their losses are against KZ and UT and Susu Yama.
Yeah, I think Shun and Ishin win that match. And I think we get the thing that we talked about 2 weeks ago. I think KZ and UT are going to wiggle their way into the semifinals.
They could very easily do that. So with that scenario, that would leave Kung Fu Masters at 4. That would pull up Shun and Ishin to 5. that in that scenario there, you would have KZ and UT win against Big Hug. That would put them at six. And then no matter what, the one problem about that then, that makes Big Hug versus D Courage a match that has no stakes. That's the thing, because both of those teams, because of where everything is at, if KZ and UT win on the 31st, and if Jackie Funky Kamei and Jason Lee win on the 30th, like it could be a scenario where tiebreak goes to KZ and UT because they both win. And then again, in that scenario, that means D Courage and Big Hug does not matter. So you have to find some way that one of these two teams is going to be in the final.
Are we looking at a draw where KZ and UT versus Big Hug is a draw?
I think that's possible because that puts them at five. It does not clinch them the block. It does mean that Big Hug has to beat D Courage to advance.
Yeah. And then you could have D Courage win. And I think that might be what they do. I was looking at the time limit draws. You know, there were five time limit draws last year. It was the Machines and Yamadoi. Mm-hmm. Kakuta and Yoshioka versus Hulk and Minoru, Kakuta and Yoshioka versus Yo and Ishin, the Mochizukis versus Nagano and Kato, which I remember loving that match, and the Mochizukis versus Jason and Jackie, which I remember loving that match. This year, they're at four currently and feeling like they're pacing for five. They've done Big Hug versus Susumu and Yamato, Dai and Kakuta versus Ishin and Skywalker, Ben and Minoru versus Joe and Tamanaga, and Awashi and Kondo versus Shimizu and Strong Machine J. So I feel like we're getting a fifth draw, and it's probably going to come by way of KZ and UT versus Big Hug.
Yeah, I think that that's where it is. And it's something where I feel like this year, and it might be because we had those double countouts that kind of, you know, there's more scenarios there, and that changes that with that. And I feel like that kind of breathes a little bit more of a fresh air with that. But I'm full aboard on that Big Hug KZ UT time limit draw. Like that's, and especially with the fact that that's not the main event. Or, no, that's on the 31st. No, the main event for Kobe Sambo Hall is Kung Fu Masters versus Shun and E.
Yeah, but the main event on the 31st, that Big Hug match is, it's the Big Hug match.
Okay. Running down these two cards, so Kobe Sambo Hall, it's on TV. It is on the 30th. Fuda Tanaka, rookies match in the opener. Royal Sambo, the big thing you need to know, Johnny Valletta's in this thing. We got to see how that goes. D Courage teams with Misaki Mochizuki versus Big Hug and Azushi Kanda. That's wild. Eight man tag is Yamato, DK, Susumu, Kagetora versus KZ, Shimizu, Strong Machine J, UT. And then you have those two block matches, Team Muscle versus Aganiso, and then Kung Fu Masters and Shun and Ishin there in Kobe. That's what we have for the 30th. Looking ahead to the 31st, they're in Hiroshima for that one. The block matches, as you mentioned, Big Hug and KZUT main eventing. No Hug versus Haru Owashi and Tsuji Kondo semi-main eventing. You're getting Kai, Shun, and Ishin versus Shimizu, Jay, and Jason further down on that show. Then you have the rematch. We didn't get this on YouTube yet, but Jackie Funky Kamei versus Johnny Valletta 2.
Yeah, I think these are two great-looking shows. I'm into these.
And we're going a little bit long this week. We're going to talk now. We had a off-air production meeting. We're going to do the Mania preview next week. Get y'all ready as y'all are all going up to Philadelphia for that coming up in a few weeks. But Buyuden Zero Volume 4 happened last week. Tokyo Shinjuku Face, not a strong attendance, I would say, for the show. But five matches on it. They've already announced Buyuden Zero Volume 5 coming up. But overall, Case, this is always one of those like really fun random Dragon Gate shows that have popped up over the last year. And nothing insanely blow away. I love the main event, but just a good solid two-hour Dragon Gate show, I feel like.
Yeah, these shows are really enjoyable. I mean, there was, you know, unfortunately, out of the five matches, we were saddled with two comedy matches, and I wish it was at the very least, you know, four hard-hitting matches and one comedy match, but that seems to be the vibe on these shows, that they're leaning into comedy a little bit more than I'd like. But, I mean, I thought the opener was great. I thought the semi-main was awesome, and I went notebook on the main event. So it's really hard to complain when you go 3.5, 3.75, and 4 stars on the matches that matter on this show.
Yeah, I wonder if Hikaru Sato had some booking or something, because it was very clear that that should have been Ryo Kawamura and Hikaru Sato versus Mochizuki and Yamato, not Kikataro, right?
Very much so.
Yeah, but like I feel like that was the case. And I felt like they kind of played up the fact that Kikataro was in that match as well. So let's just kind of get into it. I feel like I largely co-sign with you on this. Like I had the opener and semi at 3.5 stars, the main event at 4.25, and then 2 comedy matches. Like, if you're asking me, like, for 2 hours, give me that, I'll take that every day of the week. I would probably like to move around some of the guys that were involved in this show, but overall, I thought that it was solid. Opened up with a Class of 09 reunion, KZ and Yohei versus Dragon Daya, and the guy who probably, in another universe, would be a Dragon Gate champion, and Alejandro. Oh wait, he's the Twin Gate champion. We got to see those belts today, as it was a 20-minute time limit draw versus these Class of 09 versus kind of like stylistic, I would say, mirrors in a way with the Daya and Alejandro. Real fun work though with both sides.
I feel very bad for Alejandro. I was watching this show and once again looking at how seamlessly he fit into Dragon Gate, and really started thinking that he is really a victim of the industry being in the time and place that it's in. If you go back to the last 25 years of Japanese wrestling, which I think is, for all intents and purposes, you know, the Noah split really kicks off this era of Japanese juniors. I mean, there's not a worse time for a guy like him to exist, because he's not a Dragon Gate wrestler, although I legitimately think they should be trading you know, some full-time roster member and a dojo pick to be named later to get Alejandro full-time. You know, he's not a Dragon Gate wrestler. The Noah Junior division is terrible. The All Japan Junior division, I think, is actually quite fun, but Alejandro doesn't work there, and I don't really know if he'd fit in there, and I don't see him jumping to New Japan anytime soon. This is just a very unfortunate time for him, because I started looking at even like the Noah Juniors division from 10 years ago. And it's not like you or I, two massive fans of junior heavyweight wrestling, it's not like we celebrate the mid-2010s Noah Juniors. But if you even put him in that division, you're talking about Harada and Kotoge and Kano and Ishimori and Zack Sabre Jr. and Ogawa, you know, 10 years younger Ogawa. And I feel like he would have thrived in that environment, let alone if there was a viable, legitimate secondary junior promotion. You know, Osaka Pro is doing good work, but they're not a full-time promotion. Michinoku Pro is now on Wrestle Universe, but they're not a full-time promotion. There is nowhere for this guy to go, and he's stuck in Noah, and I don't think he'll ever leave for Dragon Gate, and it's just a damn shame.
Yeah, and it's something where, in a lot of way, like, his style and, like, his overall kind of vibe, in a way, like, the one other place that would work for him would be mid-aughts 0-1 is, like, the only
other
place.
Yeah. He would have done great there.
But it's one of those things where this match is kind of with, like, the what worked for me here, and the thing that kind of, with the overall natural vibe situation, KZ really has such a command as a heel at this point of his career. He knows what to do with this. He knows how to, like, even work it so someone like Alejandro, this crowd was really into him for tagging out to Daya. And it is like those kind of tendencies are like, oh, Alejandro, you just kind of plug in, and he's just works just as well as the Kobe model, basically.
He never misses a beat. I mean, he really wrestles like a homegrown Dragon Gate guy.
It's one of those things that's really kind of remarkable and wild to think of. And then KZ and Yohei, I mean, you get the reunion of the cursed class. And hey, there are some people who are very excited about KZ and Yohei being together. I'll never be one of them.
I find Yohei to be a serviceable junior heavyweight wrestler. I'm never excited about him. I also think he's improved greatly over the last 2 or 3 years. I think he's very watchable. I think he's far more watchable when he pops up in Dragon Gate than in Noah. So I don't mind him here, but my cards are pushed towards the table in Alejandro's direction, not Yohei's.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, like, I feel like the Scab, and the scab's been picked off, and like the wound is apparently healed. I just it's something where that's a me thing, I guess, and he's always fine. But yeah, no, Alejandro and Kano and Amakusa, those are the ones I'm more interested in from the Noah style getting in there. Lingerie Mudo defended the Open the War against Punch Tominaga. Punch Tominaga won on a reverse figure four. Muto retains due to crowd decision, as the Owari Gate is the match where not the winner retains. It is always by crowd response. And maybe what they need to do is get Muto to show up outside of Tokyo, and that's when the Dragon Gate guy can get the belt back.
Yeah, I don't know. I understand this is something that seems to be over. It's a part of this show, sure, yay, woohoo. Not moving my needle, I'll say that much.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, like, hey, Minoru Sawa, this is what he does now. Like, this is the life that Minoru Sawa leads. This is his deal, and that is what it is. It's just one of those things you kind of sit there and you go like, oh yeah, yep, this is what he's doing. On this kind of show, this is what he's doing, Case. This is what we get. Is this so.
and then you check back in and you go, is he still doing that thing? And it's like, oh, he's still doing that thing. All right.
Yeah, he is always kind of doing that thing, and that's really all he's doing. I forget which gym is the one he works at.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's not Kiki. That's all I know. It's not Kiki. Kikataro and Ryo Kawamura teamed up to go against kind of the house tag team, Mochizuki and Yamato. This was a Mochizuki or Yamato eventually just getting tired of Kikataro shit. They do a sleeper sequence, and Yamato gets him to do the arm drop thing two times. Kikataro revs up and looks like he's going to go, and Yamato just cranks it just a little bit more, and Kikataro tapped out. Kawamura like smoked Mochi with a knee opening up this match, and they did a standing 10 count. It was a little took me aback a little bit. And then the rest was a comedy match.
Yeah, Kawamura is like almost good on these shows.
I like him in this contest.
I wish it was somebody else, but he's not bad. I've seen him be bad, and it's not on these Buyuden shows. He brings it a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He has the gear that's like the oh, if he was any sort of star, the NFL would immediately strike down, you know. semi-main event, Team Muscle, Benkei and Kota Minoru. They did awful in the tag team tournament. That's okay. They got a pin on Hajime Ohara, who teamed with Sugiura here. Really, really fun. Sugiura, whenever you see Takashi Sugiura, just like stare at Benkei like that. I felt like I needed one Powerball at that moment to book that match.
Well, this was kind of the fun part was, you know, there's obvious chemistry between he and Ben that you would expect and that luckily they delivered on. But I found the stuff with he and Minoru to be just as interesting because he really brought out the edge in Minoru that we're always looking for. And some nights we get it, some nights we don't. And it's always a gamble as to, you know, which version of Coach Minoru is going to walk through that entranceway. And we got a really physical, seemingly really motivated Minoru, and he worked great with Segura. I mean, I had a lot of fun watching those two go at it.
Yeah, and it's something that, like, one of the, like, only other big stories I think we could really tell of the week was just Team Muscle washing out of the tournament and everyone going like, oh, everything's fine with kind of Gold Class. So that Kota Minoru taking a lot of losses throughout this tournament, him being able to kind of charge up. And I do think it's something where, like, Minoru kind of is in this weird spot right now in 2024. And like this, and just with like how booking cycling down and like unit stakes are, he's just not really a front figure right now. And it's just like a fun thing that he's able to have like these kind of face offs when, like, usually for a young guy getting cycled down, because, you know, the kind of conversation that usually comes of it, no, it's just not his time right now. Why not have him have a fun match going up against Team Noah?
He feels a little, for lack of a better term, he feels a little naked when he's not against Yamato, because he and Yamato have a slow burn going on. It seems like they're headed in some direction there. When he's not doing that, he does feel very directionless, even if, you know, throughout the history of his short career, there have been times where he's been directionless or worse, has had direction and has felt way off in the ring. I think in ring he's doing fine work. It's just without Yamato, it's a guy going through the motions to some degree.
Yeah, and it's even kind of stuck out in the tournament. Like just the storyline and everything. It's like, oh, where is Yamato right now? Like whenever I see Kutaminoru on screen, I think, where is Yamato at this time? And it's a hard thing to like book a tournament around.
Yeah, absolutely.
The main event case, some real heavyweight wrestling. Big Boss Shimizu, newly freelance Shuji Ishikawa. Shuji Ishikawa wins with a Fire Thunder Driver. I'm surprised Shimizu, so this show was on the 21st. I'm surprised Shimizu made the rest of the weekend swing with after this match, because he went through the ringer with Ishikawa and it fucking rocked.
It's a crazy dynamic in this match where you get to see how truly strong Shuji Ishikawa is, because he just picks up Shimizu with ease. But you also get to see how truly athletic Shimizu is, because, you know, even if Ishikawa has some height on him, they roughly have the same build. But the way Shimizu flies around in comparison is really remarkable to look at.
Yeah, and it's something where more often than not, it's like Shimizu doing like flying tackles, doing not even like drop kicks. It's him just reacting and just like kind of making himself into like this flying weight, which is the only way Ishikawa, like that's the lane for him to be in this match. And he takes an absolute beating, a apron DDT, a Fire Thunder Driver on the apron, just a tough, hard-hitting match. And if this is like the Shuji Ishikawa that might happen if he's stopping by now and then or doing a lot of LEC branded things, I'm all here for that. Like, that's the Shuji Ishikawa that I feel like actually works within a Dragon Gate context.
I'm totally with you. You know, if this was his trial run, and again, you know, I said this 2 weeks ago, I don't know anything for sure, but it certainly seems like Ishikawa, by way of the LEC Corporation, is going to find his way back into Dragon Gate this year. If this is the output we get, I'm all for it. You know, I thought this match was a much like the Shimizu and Strong Machine J versus Agan Isu match, certainly a detachment from the usual Dragon Gate style, but in reality, just a tremendous heavyweight wrestling match.
Yeah, and it was something where it felt like that Shimizu coming out of it, not necessarily like the way of, oh, Kakuta really came out looking good, even though he lost to Shingo Takagi. It was something where it was like, oh, maybe if Shimizu gets another shot, he's going to be able to take out Ishikawa.
Very much so.
So I guess my question, I'd leave this on case. Which match did you like more? Big Boss Shimizu versus Shuji Ishikawa or the Kung Fu Masters match?
Oh, I like the Kung Fu Masters match way more. And I like Shimizu Ishikawa a lot, but no. My weekend ratings would go Kung Fu Masters, D-Courage, then Shimizu and Strong Machine J versus Agan Isu, then Shimizu versus Shuji Ishikawa.
Okay, that's fair. I think I would go Kung Fu Masters, D-Courage up top, then Shuji Ishikawa, Shimizu, and then closing up with the Agan Isu Big Machine match, I feel like.
And I think that's a very very fair ranking.
And a fun weekend of Dragon Gate. As we mentioned, they will be back on the network this weekend. It's only their second or third, if you want to include Buyaden, appearance on the network in March. And then they will close out the March schedule in Hiroshima on the 31st. But Case, unless you have anything else, I think that's about it for us tonight.
That's all I got.
All right, you can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case is at _ in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week talking about the last week of March and Rey de Barajas closing in to discover who's Dragon Gate's top tag team and Dragon Gate returning to WrestleMania weekend. A whole bunch of shows coming up in April with Dragon Gate guys on it. Get ready for that, but we'll be back with you next week to talk all about it. Take care, everyone.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.